of Nola Darling, a young woman who refuses to choose between her three lovers because she views monogamy as a form of slavery. Again, that's She Gotta Have It at the Top Down Rooftop Cinema, Thursday, July 28th at 8 p.m. on the top of the Hotel Deluxe parking structure at Southwest 15th and Yamhill in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual Peace Festival, Saturday, July 30th at 5 p.m. at the Dolores Winningstad Theater in Portland. The Peace Festival theme this year is Just Us Speaks, and will showcase youth from all across the city with different backgrounds, worldviews, experiences, and insights who will share their hearts through the performing arts. Again, that's the third annual Peace Festival, Saturday, July 30th at 5 p.m. at the Dolores Winningstad Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow Intertribal Film Festival 2016, bringing Native American and Indigenous independent film to Portland, Oregon, July 28th through the 31st. Opening night at Clinton Street Theater with showings through the weekend at Hollywood Theater and Rainmaker Gallery. Please consider supporting independent media. More information can be found at oneflamingarrow.com.
Somewhere between the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile and a Burning Man art cart.
You know, it brings joy.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo van? From now until July 31st, we have a contest. If you spot the van anywhere around town, post a picture on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram with the hashtag FuzzyBoo. You will be entered to win a pair of passes to Music Fest Northwest. More information and contest terms can be found at kboo.fm/FuzzyBoo.
Here, inside, right? And then there's a little button on the dash here.
Yes!
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
It's 5:02 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. We go now to Pacifica Radio Network's live broadcast of the Democratic National Convention, hosted by Davey D., Margaret Prescott, Mark Babawi, plus many other programmers and news reporters from Pacifica and Pacifica-affiliated stations. We will be broadcasting live until 9 p.m. tonight.
Until a Mississippi state flag with the Confederate symbol was removed, an hour later it was removed. This is the kind of action and the power that's going on in the streets as well as in the suites here among the deliberations by the delegates and their committees.
Right, and Democracy Spring is in the House. We're going to be talking with them later in the hour. Several of them, in fact, are still in jail, even as we speak. And then there's more action, 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 more action. So right inside the convention hall, Askia Mohammed, also a rocky start, to say the very least. What we're going to do now, we're going to give you just a little taste of it. We're going to go now to a clip from the Washington Post about some of the goings-on on the floor and around this kickoff of the DNC.
It all started on Friday. The emails dropped, and they were incredibly embarrassing, apparently confirming that Democratic officials had basically been trying to help Hillary Clinton throughout the primary. By Saturday, Democrats were getting really, really nervous. The emails were bad. They made the party look bad. And by Sunday morning, it was clear that she was being pressured to resign, both from within the campaign and from outside of the campaign, not just from Bernie Sanders supporters. It ended when the president himself called her and asked her to resign. And that, Democrats told me, is not a very good sign. You don't want the president to be the one to fire you, essentially. So here we are at the convention. She's not resigning at the beginning of the convention, but at the end. And so she will be a constant presence in Philadelphia. Installed in her position, and is still going to be a source of tension and friction with the Clinton folks. They've worked for weeks and weeks with Bernie Sanders supporters to try to hammer out some of the details about the platform, about the sort of pomp and circumstance of this. At the same time, I think a lot of Democrats, and including Clinton camp officials that I spoke to, really think that by resolving Debbie Wasserman Schultz before the convention gaveled in on Monday, they have kind of put that chapter behind them, and they have the best opportunity to move forward. The speakers' lists are designed to kind of
Hathaway is the CEO of this convention, all African-American women, and they couldn't be happier that even though she didn't intentionally fall on her sword, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is now out of the way, out of the picture, and these women are moving forward, making a change already. By the end of this convention, we'll see those changes, I'm sure.
Could Hillary be doing more to woo the black vote? And Donna Brazile, I'm sure, is going to be moving forward with all of her hair still in place. It's just remarkable for people who've seen Donna Brazile on television. What we're going to do now, a controversy broke out on the floor. You really got to hear this. We want to welcome, of course, all of our listeners from around the country. Check this out.
So Debbie can speak. It's okay. Everybody, let's hear from our speakers. We have other speakers as well.
So I can see there's a little bit of interest in my being here, and I appreciate that interest, and a little bit of interest from the press, but that really shows you that Florida is the most significant battleground state that will make sure that Hillary Clinton is elected President of the United States of America. disruptive, we know that that's not the Florida that we know. The Florida that we know is united. The Florida that we know is going to make sure that we continue to create jobs like the 14.8 million jobs that were created under Barack Obama's leadership.
All righty, so Askia, you heard what was going on. I mean, there was actually protest action happening inside the DNC. People were holding up signs about the TPP. They were shouting down the leadership. Just an incredible, incredible scene.
Bernie Sanders also spoke today. About 1,500 people came to see him preview his remarks tonight at a meeting in the convention center. And that event, it was a raucous event. There was a two-minute ovation after he finished speaking. Cheers. The Bernie Revolution is really continuing at this time, and we're going to see and hear much more from them as we progress.
Right, and we'll be hearing from some others in the Pacifica team who'll be joining us to discuss that, who actually heard that Bernie speech live. What I'd like to do now is to welcome to our national coverage William K. Black. He is an associate professor of economics and law at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He's a former bank regulator who led investigations of the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s and author of the book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. William K. Black, welcome.
Thank you. Good to speak to you.
Okay, so the DNC kicking off, all kinds of controversies going on. President Barack Obama literally had to call Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you understand, to really kind of push her in the direction of stepping down. And then all of the email controversies and the DNC, well, they're blaming Putin. They're blaming Russia. Your take on all of this, William K. Black.
Sure. So the great issue of the Democratic Party has become the system is rigged. And, of course, Donald Trump, it's been so successful, Donald Trump is actually appropriating that language. And here you have the Democratic Party rigging the system at the highest levels, the head of the DNC, and even going so far as to try to attack whether Bernie Sanders was actually Jewish enough. Really extraordinary stuff, and revealed apparently, actually, by Russian services, whether or not you believe the other Putin stuff, that is the best guess. It is the Russian Secret Service deliberately intervening in the U.S. election, which is, as far as we know, unprecedented. And as you have just reported, instead of falling on her sword, Ms. Schultz said, no, I'm not going to go. And it actually took a phone call from the president get her to go. And, of course, if you resign in disgrace, you're supposed to leave. But instead, she delayed her resignation, even after the president asked for it, and wanted to have a material role in this convention. And you just played the clip of what happened when she tried to do that.
Yeah, and, you know, you wrote a piece in Consortium News on the VP pick. Because I was out on the streets the last few days in Philadelphia, and let me tell you, the folks out on the street, the Bernie supporters, the other protesters, the people that the Hillary camp have to bring into that big tent, Askia, they're none too excited about Tim Kaine. I mean, you mentioned his name, and a few people just gave me a big yawn.
Askia. Yeah, it's worse than the yawn from the standpoint of Bernie supporters, because you know, Senator Kaine, let's, you know, be clear, he shouldn't be demonized in any way. There are many strengths to the man, but he is, as with Hillary, as with Bill Clinton, as with Al Gore, and et cetera, et cetera. These are folks who are literally leaders of the Democratic Leadership Council, the DLC. So this is the Wall Street wing of the party that was funded by Wall Street. And, of course, under President Bill Clinton, deregulated and desupervised the banking industry, and it ended disastrously. And so Bernie supporters, this would have been a good opportunity for Hillary to pick them up by picking a vice presidential candidate who rejected that view. And instead, Senator Kaine is actually aggressively pushing it. He just sent a letter a few days ago calling for further deregulation of banks.
Mm. William Black, the Bernie revolution is not over, according to Bernie supporters here. Is there any chance they feel that they made a major victory in knocking 60% of the superdelegates out of the future of the party? They say they got the most progressive platform in Democratic Party history. Is there any chance that they may influence, if Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine are elected, that they may influence the governing of the party by pushing them toward a more progressive stand?
So you're quite correct. In the platform, there have been significant movement towards Senator Sanders' position. And you've seen that Senator Warren has been very effective with the Obama administration in moving it on particular issues. For example, we would have one of the architects of the financial crisis as chairman of the Federal Reserve now, but for Senator Warren leading a revolt of people like Senator Sanders and such in the Senate and saying no. And that's the only reason we have the first female chair of the Federal Reserve in its history.
So we end up, in essence, having two Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, in the Senate coming up in 2017.
Well, it's broader than that, but you're quite correct. There is a material number of Democratic senators who are very opposed to the policies of the DLC, which were pretty explicitly, we're going to adopt large parts of the economic program of the Republicans, not the social programs. Right. These are folks who are strong. The DLC folks were strong on things like racism. But on economics, they are basically like moderate Republicans of 25 years ago.
All right. William K. Black, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. But thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
William K. Black, Associate Professor of Economics and Law at the University of Missouri, Kansas. Now, the clip that we played earlier of the booing of Debbie Wasserman Schultz was from a pre-convention Florida delegation breakfast that took place in Philadelphia this morning. There was a lot of booing also on the floor. I understand that even during the prayer, when Hillary's name was mentioned, some people started booing. So, and then there was the action against the TPP on the floor. But what we want to do now is to just, first of all, let you know a little bit of information on the polls. Trump has gotten a boost in the polls following the RNC last week. In today's CNN ORC poll, general election poll, he's now ahead of Clinton nationally by 3 percentage points. But when the Libertarian Party candidate Gary Johnson and Green Party candidate Jill Stein go into the mix, Trump gains an even bigger lead of 5 percentage points. Now, Trump is also said to be 4 points ahead of Clinton in yesterday's LA Times USC polls, 2 points ahead in another poll from Gravis, but only 1 point ahead in today's poll from CBS. We're going to give you some poll updates from the swing states, the all-important swing states. But what we want to do now is Bernie. You heard Askia mentioned earlier that Bernie spoke to his delegates. We're going to go to a clip from that right now, and then we'll be bringing in Jay Winter, Nightwolf, and also Garland Nixon to end the mix here. They actually heard that speech. Let's go to that clip right now.
Yes, we are going to reform a broken criminal justice system. We want our young people at decent jobs or in school, not rotting in jail cells. And yes, we are going to achieve comprehensive immigration reform and a path toward citizenship. Those are some some of the ideas that we must continue to fight for every single day. Secondly, immediately, right now, we have got to defeat Donald Trump. And we have got to elect Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. Brothers and sisters, brothers and sisters, this is the real world that we live in. Trump is a bully and a demagogue. Trump has made bigotry and hatred the cornerstone of his campaign.
All righty, and there you heard Bernie. And one has to wonder, speaking to his delegates, when he says the real world we live in, if he's, you know, what he's really talking about. Is it the reality of Trump or the reality of his supporters having to accept that he's not the candidate? Let's go now to Garland Nixon, programmer from WFPFW based in Washington, D.C. Garland.
Yeah, and I think what Bernie's trying to do is he's trying to kind of flip to we've got to be, you know, practical here and we've got to elect Hillary. And his supporters are not trying to hear that at all. And now let's keep in mind something. You know, after the last couple of days of the great WikiLeaks train wreck, I would say Debbie Wasserman Schultz, rather than stepping down, she stepped up. You know, she got a promotion. That's what's happened. And I think rightfully so. Bernie supporters feel as though Hillary pretty much poked them in the eyes, you know, kind of like they were the Three Stooges or something. I mean, they feel like they've been spat on, they've been mistreated. I've talked to some of the people around the convention, and basically the feeling from them is Hillary don't like us and she don't want us anyway.
Wasserman Schultz is right now the chair of the Clinton campaign.
Now, keep in mind, Wasserman
Schultz. That is a promotion.
Yeah, and see, here's the thing. Wasserman Schultz was the chair of the Clinton campaign in 2008. 2011 through 2016, she went to the DNC chair. 2016, she returns to the chair, and Hillary says she will continue to be a surrogate, her exact words. And I think, you know, these people are nuanced in this, and they're like, you know what, this ain't working for us. And that's a problem, because you got to get your base out if you want to win.
That's right. And Jay Winter, Nightwolf, Pacifica programmer, your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, it's the games people play. And believe me, they are playing a master game. But I think this one is going to come back to bite them in their backsides. Because these people worked very hard to get Bernie to where he was, and they expect something from him, and they're not getting it, and they're not having it.
Right, and, you know, Jay also, Bernie Sanders, he's trying to play up his supporters at the DNC to tone down their passion, and he sent out texts, he sent out emails saying the movement's credibility will be damaged by conduct such as booing and turning of backs, of walking out and others and similar displays. So, you know, both of you, a quick comment on that, because the DNC today apologized to Bernie over the leaked emails. And, you know, one has to wonder if that's going to be good enough for his supporters. Why don't we start with you, Jay? Yeah,
right. They apologize over the leaked emails. Did they apologize to Bernie for what they allowed Debbie to do to Donald Trump in this election? I don't think so. You know, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time.
Yeah, and I think from the perspective of a lot of the Bernie Sanders, it's like this. You know, you steal my wallet. And then you say, I'm sorry, and you try to sell me back my own wallet. That was already my wallet. So you're gonna. So they're going to apologize for something after you win, after you take it, after you cheat, and then you say, "I'm sorry that I cheated and I won, and I'm gonna walk away with the proceeds and smile." So let's all be friends again. And I think that's the way the Bernie people see it, and it's certainly understandable.
All righty, you're going to be hearing more from Garland Nixon from WPFW and Jay Winter Night Wolf later this in our coverage this evening, and also throughout the next 4 days. So we'll be back with you. And Askia, we want to bring Jill Stein into the mix. We wondered if you just had a quick comment on Bernie now trying to get his supporters to kind of dampen things down a little bit.
Well, I don't know if they're going to have any part of it, although I'll say on the floor this afternoon, as the evening progressed and the arena filled with delegates, more and more the boos, the cheers for Hillary seemed to outshout the boos over her name. But before her name would be simply mentioned, as you heard, Bernie mentioned her name and got booed himself by his own followers. But then had some of them heard Donna Brazile, she was passionate in her apologies multiple times this morning, speaking to the Black Caucus in her apologies. She's the new DNC chief, and she was really, as I said, passionate in her apologies to Bernie Sanders for the leaked emails. And so I think if they are to be heard from, it's too bad that Hillary Clinton is still sticking with her flawed surrogate who may not do her any good, but others in the party are ready to move past her, and we'll just see what goes on. It seemed as though she wasn't going to make it through the day, but then, she seems to be hanging on, and for some reason or another, Hillary is holding on to her and keeping the wind under her wings.
That's right. Well, Askia Muhammad, so this is Margaret Prescott. Askia Muhammad, also, you just heard from him. I'm so delighted to be working with you on this, Askia. And Askia, the caucuses, you were at the Black Caucus today, the Native American Council met, the Hispanic Caucus, the Disability Caucus, and others began their meetings today. What we're going to do now, though, is there's been a lot of action out on the street and in the community. And last week, I should say, I attended the People's Convention, jam-packed, all righty, and Jill Stein got a really warm welcome. Let's hear what Jill Stein had to say as part of her presentation to the People's Convention.
This is an historic moment where we are rising up as a movement for democracy and justice across this nation and across this planet, and we will not be stopped. And we see that movement in all the work that you are doing, because I know that inside of this movement for a political revolution is the same movement for many social revolutions, and that we come together as a broad movement, and we become unstoppable as a joint movement for people, planet, and peace over profit. The fight to make Black Lives Matter is not going away. It is only getting stronger across this country, and the terrible blowback against innocent police is a tragedy, but in order to solve that tragedy, we have to stop this fundamental, centuries-long tragedy of the assault on African-American lives in this country. Racism and violence is not confined to policing. It is also a built-in part of our economy, because when the average African-American, due to historic thievery and injustice and redlining and community disinvestment and extraction of wealth and labor from the African-American communities, that that has resulted in a horrific number that I just want to empower you with. Because right now the African American family has 5 cents on the dollar of the wealth of a Caucasian family. That is unacceptable, horrific, and violent. Not only do we have the moral authority to transform the world in front of us, we actually have the solutions to this crisis. One other solution I should be sure to mention on this very hot day in yet another heat wave is the solution to the climate crisis. When people say to me, but aren't you afraid of Donald Trump? I say, no, I am afraid of climate change. Even under a Democratic White House with 2 Democratic houses of Congress, we did not begin to solve the problem of climate change. We created a Trojan horse for the fossil fuel industry in the form of all of the above, which turned out to be drill, baby, drill on steroids. That's why we are calling for 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. This problem will not be solved by political parties that are on the payroll of predatory banks and fossil fuel giants. These crises we face are absolutely solvable, and we are the only ones who can solve them. It is such an honor to be on this journey with you, this incredibly powerful journey. I can't thank you enough for having brought this fight into full daylight. This never would have happened had you not launched the power of this movement inside Bernie's campaign. I am putting out another appeal to Bernie in the light of this email scandal. I humbly ask Bernie to please consider withdrawing his endorsement of Hillary Clinton based on the outright purposeful sabotage of your campaign by the DNC and by Hillary Clinton. They do not deserve anybody's vote. Sit down and let's talk about how we build this unstoppable revolutionary campaign inside of a revolutionary political party with me in the Green Party. We will not be stopped. It's not a man, it's a movement. Let's go forward. I ask Bernie to join us and continue leading the way with all of you. Thank you so much.
And that was Jill Stein at the People's Convention this past Saturday. Jill Stein also spoke today to a large crowd. And in fact, the thunderstorms, there's now a flash flood warning for Philadelphia struck when Jill Stein was out there speaking. What I'd like to do, this is Margaret Prescott, and I'm here with Askia Mohammed. This is the Pacifica national coverage of the DNC. And I'd like to throw it over now to Charisse Delgadillo. Charisse.
Hi, Margaret. So here we have Lily Escalin Garcia, who is the president of the National Education Association and just finished speaking on the floor at the Democratic National Convention. Thanks for coming on.
It was very cool.
So tell us more about your organization and what exactly you talked about on the floor.
We are actually the largest union, largest professional education association. We have 3 million members, people who get a paycheck from preschool to graduate school, K-12 public schools, higher education, and I'm very proud of that. I'm a sixth grade teacher myself, and I taught for 20 years elementary grades in Utah.
And you hit on some points today on the floor with regards to immigration, tying education into immigration. So can you expand on that?
You know, you get 2 whole minutes to talk about something that's very important to you, and that could be everything for me. I mean, that's the families that are struggling financially. That's my class size. I had 39 fifth graders in a class one time. But I focused on immigration reform because more and more of my students, and I taught for a time in a homeless shelter in Salt Lake City. And a lot of those kids would whisper in your ear, and they'd tell you about their fears of la migra, that they were going to maybe lose their dad or their mom or one of their brothers and sisters. It's separating families, and it's tearing my kids apart. And so I wanted to talk about the gratitude that I had for Hillary Clinton on being one of the key sponsors of the DREAM Act that couldn't pass the Senate. We have to look at the races not just at the top of the ticket in presidential races, but the Senate, the Congress, your governor, your school board races. All of these are important to these students. But it is important to have a president who understands these families and the tragedy of separating families. And that's why we were so also grateful to the Obama administration. We haven't agreed with the Obama administration on a lot of things, like testing. But he went out of his way to say, since Congress won't act with comprehensive immigration reform that could protect those dreamers, then he had an executive order that allowed an interpretation of the current law to say that these students who did not make the decision to come here, they came here as children, that if they stayed in school, if they weren't in trouble with the law, if they wanted to go to college, work, or even join the military, they could get a special temporary visa that would bring them out of the shadows.
Now, how does this tie into education and specifically your union? Because that's with immigration. So how does that tie in? How does this affect educators?
Everything that affects our students and their family is something that we're fighting for. So, I mean, that's why it's so comprehensive and why we get involved in politics. Because sometimes the issue is a child who loses a family member. We're now working very hard in North Carolina on free Wilden, where these are, at least at this point, 9 high school students who just turned 18 who came from Central America, not looking for, they weren't here undocumented. They were here legitimately asking for asylum because they felt their lives were in danger and they had a case to be made for that. Some of these kids, just after they turned 18, were taken on their way to school as they were boarding a school bus. And immigration officials came, took these kids that had never been in trouble, and said, no, you are a priority to deport. And so we've been actively pursuing remedies for these students, and at least 2 of them now. We know that one has been freed on bond, and the other has been allowed to appeal. We're trying to get him freed on bond. These are education issues, because they're issues that affect students that we love.
So there, in the platform during the primaries, there's been a lot of advocating for preschool advancement and also for college, tuition-free college. But what about the K-12 system? What is the party doing for the advocating for the K-12 system specifically?
You know, we've been we actually are very bipartisan. We'll take friends where we find them. And so I'm from Utah. Most of my members in Utah are Republicans. But what brings us together is not the party we belong to. I am a Democrat, but it is who will help our students. And so we have been struggling, and our students have been suffering under No Child Left Untested, a bill that was passed with bipartisan support. Ted Kennedy, one of the most liberal Democrats, George Bush, one of our most conservative presidents, and they agreed that what we would do is we would judge a whole and happy child based on a math and reading standardized cut score and whether or not you reached your quota of kids that could be above that cut score. While they were defunding education, while they were increasing class sizes, while they were getting rid of things that didn't fit on the test, like the arts, like debate, like foreign languages, those were all being decimated. While they said, you know, really all we care about is can kids read and write. That sounds like they're preparing a certain type of workforce, doesn't it? I mean, it just sounded like they were saying there are some kids who live in certain zip codes that will get the theater department and get the technology in their school that they need. And there are other kids, well, let's not waste our time with them. So we have been working to roll back the incredibly hurtful testing mandates and mandated punishments for kids that didn't hit their cut scores for 14 long years. And after the movement of parents and even the business community that said, we're looking for critical thinkers, we're looking for creative people, you're sending us folks that can memorize someone else's answer. That's not what anybody needs in this world. So finally, we were able to convince a critical mass of Republicans and Democrats to change the law, to get rid of high-stakes mandated tests, and to replace it with something very different. We said, we don't want not to know how our kids are doing. You just think the standardized test tells us everything, and it doesn't. So now we have in place the possibility of a dashboard of better indicators of success, but also indicators of service and support. Who has the AP chemistry class? Which schools have the theater department and the sports team? And which kids don't even get recess? They get test prep. They don't get that rich variety of classes. So here's what we've actually asked Hillary, that she said this was a great idea. I said, people will either take you into the best school in a state and say everything's just fine, or they'll take you into the poorest school in the state and say, this is why, this, look at this school, it's falling apart, we should close it down. And what we want to do is, we said, we want you to go into the best school in the state and take an inventory. Take a look at their technology. Take a look at the classes they have. Take a look at the building, the facility. And take a look at whether or not they have a school nurse and a librarian and a counselor for these kids. And then drive across town to the school that has nothing. Because that's the story. It's not that we don't know how to improve schools. It's we don't want to pay for it. And so if you live in a very rich community, the way we fund our schools is still mostly with property taxes. You've got all the money you need. And the parents who say, I insist my kids have everything that will give them an advantage when I get them into that super college, they're right. Their kids do need all those things. And so do the kids across the track. So the kids whose parents can't even make a living wage, who sometimes might get laid off for coming to a parent-teacher conference because they have no job protections whatsoever. So what we want is something that says equity means every public school has what the best public school has. And that's an easy thing to measure.
And so my very last question for you is, you, well, not you specifically, but your organization gave thanks to the GOP at the Republican National Convention. Is that,
I'm
did I read
sorry.
That correctly?
I'm sorry, on what parallel planet did that happen?
I thought I read that on the website that for the
act
that passed through Congress.
We had absolutely no presence at the Republican convention.
Okay.
There was nothing there for us to celebrate.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much, and
you
I appreciate
bet.
Your time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. And Charisse Delgadillo, thank you so very much. Thank you. Thanks to both of you. This is Margaret Prescott. And Askia, we are checking out what's happening on the floor. And right now, Luke Feeney, who is the mayor of a town in Ohio, is on the floor. So we are expecting some big names to be joining us. Bernie Sanders is going to be speaking this evening. We understand the First Lady, Michelle Obama, among those speaking. Hillary Clinton is not here yet. She's still on the campaign trail today. Hillary spoke at the Veterans of Foreign Wars Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. She really won't appear at the convention until Thursday, where she'll round out the 4 days of speakers. So we will see how that goes, and we are going to be giving you also some information on how Hillary is doing in those all-important swing states. But before we do that, also speaking earlier, Trumka, the head of the powerful AFL-CIO, the largest labor organization, I think, in the world. We want to go now to a clip to hear from him on the convention floor.
Good evening. Good evening. Thank you, Massachusetts. Thank you. Good evening, delegates. My name is Marty Walsh, and I'm an alcoholic. On April 23rd, 1995, I hit rock bottom.
Trump edited.
I woke up with little memory of the night before and even less hope for the days to come.
That was obviously not Rich Trumka, although it was a moving address. Rich Trumka, I think, really... ended saying, stand up. And so he addressed the delegates certainly with a strong labor message. We have labor in the House, and we're going to hear from him now.
All righty. Do we have that, Trumka? All righty. There you go.
Here we go.
It's live radio. What can I tell you, folks?
18 years later, I became the
mayor
of Boston.
And it's great to be in Philadelphia,
a city of big dreams,
a proud, proud union town. The working people built this stage, and now we'll build a new era of shared prosperity. Working people are strong, and Donald Trump is wrong, wrong, wrong. Listen, he thinks he's a tough